So this evening we have a open darshan, questions and answers, which any topic related to Krishna consciousness. And because of some of our Western influence, are you leaving?
Tomorrow.
Okay. So then there is
every question.
I will
translate this question, like, with
hearts.
Is it okay?
Like,
yeah, as long as she knows that she wants to start.
From this world, Srila Prabhupada said that that he gave us everything, but he did not give us the one ashram. So the question is, what did Srila Prabhupada mean by saying one ashram, that it's not possible to recreate those varnas in this modern day society?
Basically, human social interaction means it's based on the principles of varnashram. But it's not scientific these days, right? Scientific means it's very clear who has what duties, who's doing what, then it works very smoothly. Nowadays, all the duties are there, but it's mixed. So therefore we say it's not scientific. Right? Does that make sense? So you have your, you have your intellectuals, you have your administrators, you have your business persons, you have your, those who assist or those who have, the jobs. So that's all there. It's just a matter of it's not coordinated actually who does what and what's their relationship. Like that. So if you're saying establishing Varnashram, then one aspect means properly organizing what's already there into, proper activity. Just like people are already eating, but now it's just a question of that they're taking bishad. You know what I'm saying? In devotional activities, people eat. Devotional activities are connected with human life, right? God interacts with his devotees based on human interaction. So human beings are already doing everything, it's just that it needs to be properly brought into line. Does that make sense? Right? It sometimes seems that it's very far away in one sense. It is because of the mentality. But generally it's because of our attachment ourself that the material nature actually has some meaning. Right? Therefore, good in the material sense then is considered nice, bad in the material sense is considered bad. Right? But actually, it's all illusion. Good means connected to Krishna, bad means not connected to Krishna. So even if it's materially nice, doesn't necessarily mean it's nice. You know, sometimes devotees get distracted and think the most important thing is to make someone a vegetarian as opposed to getting them to chant Hare Krishna. Right? But the most important thing is they chant, everything else will follow. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes devotees do big kind of like movements to establish, vegetarianism and all that, but we're not here for that. We're here to establish Krishna consciousness. Right? Being vegetarian is only important because Krishna eats vegetarian food. You know what I'm saying? So it's not the vegetarian that's important. Right? Example is given, if Krishna ate bicycles, that's what we would be offering and eating. But he doesn't. He eats vegetarian food, right? So, therefore, is actually, in one sense, it's a mentality that is very far away that makes it difficult. But otherwise, organizing society is very easy because everything's already going on anyway. right? You already have teachers, you already have doctors, lawyers, you already have people that are working in this kind of fields, you know what I'm saying? You already have priests. So it's not that anything that we say in Varnashram is strange or new, right? It's just that exactly what a Brahmin does and what is everyone else's relationship, that people don't know. Right? That would be one approach. Another approach would be that in Varnashram you have four ashrams, four varnas. So he had already established Brahmacharya Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas and the Brahminical Ashram. Right? So then Varna Ashram could mean establishing Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. That's all that's left. Not that it's a whole new work that never been touched, no one knows anything about it. No, it was already basically there. It's just if you've already got that in place, establishing Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is very easy. You know, Shudras work for people, that's already going on. Vaishyas make money, that's already going on. So probably the most difficult in establishing Varnashram is establishing Kshatriyas. Right? Because the Kshatriyas organize and make sure that everything else happens. Right? The Vaishyas, others don't do. Kshatriyas do. On the village level, the Vaishyas will do it. Like Nanda Maharaj is a Vaishya, so therefore he's king of the Vaishyas. So he organizes and sees to, you know, proper discipline and social structure in his village. But he's still under the kings of Mathura. Right? Does that make sense? That would be another aspect. That would be a second way of looking at it. Third way you could look at it is when Prabhupada said establish Varnashram means he already established the Bhagavat, you know, system, he already established the Pancharatrik system, but devotees still had material needs and desires that were not being accomplished by following that. So therefore, if they followed then the principles within the Varnashram system, then it would expand more into their life. Otherwise, Pancharatra generally is for Grihasthas, right? Like that. So the Bhagavad is for the, you know, those who are not. I mean, anybody can follow it, but generally you'll see the tendency is that. So it's not that the elements of Grihastha Ashram, basic things, aren't already there in Pancharatra. But getting into so many things like the social status, so much facility, sense gratification, so many elements that are just there in family life, that wasn't introduced. So you could take it that that would be then establishing Varnashram, which means, you know, the principles that expand into, you know, little details on, you know, how you deal with your grandmother and stuff like that, you know. So like that you could look at what it means. But it wasn't that, how you say? It's not that it's a whole area that's completely untouched like some devotees will take it. No, establishing a farm doesn't mean that only is Varnashram. Some will say only if you're living on a farm and it's agrarian based is Varnashram. But that's just the ideal form of the economics. But there were plenty of people that lived in the city. Krishna was one of them. He lived in Mathura, he lived in Dwarka. There's no farm in Dwarka. The farms would be on the mainland, you know, means you come across the ocean to the mainland, that's where the farmland would be. Right? It means in the city there is no farmland, it's always outside the city. That's how the farms are set up. The city farms are set up. So the Pandavas, they lived in a city, right? So only when Krishna was in Vrindavan, then you see he's living in a village and then you're dealing with cows and all. So that's nice, but it doesn't mean that all those persons living in the city aren't following Varnashram. Varnashram is the lifestyle of someone who is Krishna conscious, right? The natural form of social, you know, etiquette in Dharma, Arthakam, and Moksha, how they would deal. Right? That's what Varnashram is to accomplish. But Daiva Varnashram means more than that is to accomplish becoming Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
So that means that there shouldn't be so much stress on this Varna Ashram. So the main point is actually on Krishna consciousness, right?
Yes, that's true. That's but at the same time, it doesn't mean that Varna Ashram's not there. It's just like we don't put too much stress on that a temple means you have to cook food. No, but it prepares prasadam. So it's the devotional element of it. It's not that it doesn't take a lot of time. Right? Does that make sense? Like someone's a grihastha. The emphasis is not on being a grihastha, it's on being a devotee. But being a grihastha may take up, you know, 18, 20 hours of your day. Some people 22 hours of the day. But it doesn't mean that just by volume it's the most important. Right? So Varnashram may take up a big amount of administration and economics and you know, social interaction, but it doesn't mean that the structure of Varnashrams are most important. It's the devotional benefits that can be derived from following it that's important. Does that make sense?
Next question is that is there anything are devotees doing anything for how to say expanding this system of Varnashram in ISKCON, like more developing it?
Means?
No, she's saying that we have this Varnashram system. But it's not like very well developed.
No.
And are they doing something about it?
Who's this they?
She's saying that that you said that actually this already this ashram or. Are these different classes like Sudra, Vaishya, they exist in a society nowadays also, but they are like these interactions are not like proper or something. But she's asking that are the devotees doing anything about it to like more put those things in like proper relationships, like to reestablish those proper relationships.
That's right. It would be nice. But point is, unless you understand what it is, you can't establish it. Right? So generally, most devotees take it as an economic system, and that's it. But that means they're dropping Varnashram to the platform of Upadharma instead of Dharma. Right? Because they're putting it on the platform of Pranamoy instead of Anmanamoy. So that's why, basically, up to now, very few can have understood it or is able to scientifically approach it. Like that. And then more than that, you know. Basic thing is that devotees appreciate that regulation in the life is not restricting, but actually is what creates relationship. Then it would be easier to establish. But even though it's very popular nowadays to talk about relationships and talk about the individual, actually, the modern kind of approach is impersonal because they don't actually want the restrictions that create the relationship. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you have a husband and wife. Now, it becomes special in that there's a restriction that they only are close with each other. Right? So, but if they're not close, only close with each other, they have other people that they're intimate with, then the relationship's not special. But in the modern culture, it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? So we can see is by restricting, it makes it more important. Why is the relationship of a mother special? Because she'll give up so many things of herself, of her own, for the child. Right? She's worried about the kids eating or resting that's not her own. Right? So that's what makes it special. So if the mother was always off at the spa when she wanted and talking to her friends and on the phone half the day, the child wouldn't get a full experience of what is being taken care of by the mother. Right? So therefore, you can see it's an impossible concept, the modern approach to social structure. Because they're saying, be free, do whatever you want. At the same time, oh, you know, you got to worry about the individual, the personal relationships and all that. You know, that's like saying, oh, spend your money, whatever you want, do whatever you want with it and all that. And whatever, you know, it doesn't matter what you do with your money. At the same time, it would, you know, it's really nice if, you know, we could make some profit and, you know, and generate more money. It's like that. You know, everybody should be free, do whatever they like, but at the same time, where's the time? Okay, if you're free doing whatever you like, the family comes home, right? They come home, then what do? You know, the girl goes to her room, boy goes to his room, you know, the husband goes and sits on the couch, looks at his newspaper, and the wife is on the phone talking to her friends. So where's the interaction? Right? So without restriction is there just so it works properly. Right? Just like if you want to greet somebody and you want to shake hands, you're restricted to that your hand has to grasp their hand. Right? You couldn't grasp their nose and then say you're shaking hands. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? There's a rule. So, therefore, basically it comes down to no one wants to follow any rules. They only want to do what they want to do. Means they don't actually want relationships. Because relationship means responsibility. Relationship means restriction. Relationship means the possibility of getting hurt. Right? And no one wants that. So therefore, even though everyone talks about it, it's only a show. But generally the people that talk about it the most, sometimes they're very nice people, and sometimes they're very good diplomats. Right? But generally they're not just common people, simple people. They're either really special, very nice, very caring, are really good diplomats that you can't tell whether what they're actually all about. So it's an intellectual concept, but it doesn't have any actual foundation. Right? That's the problem. Foundation can only come if you understand what is a relationship, who you are. Right? How do you define the individual? You can't, because everybody can do anything and everybody's equal, everyone's the same. So if there's no difference, how there's a relationship? You know what I'm saying? Relationship is gained in the difference. Right? How much of a relationship do you have with yourself? Not much. Right? If you want to have a little bit more, you got to get a mirror. So at least there's two of you. Then you can talk to one and make faces and stuff. All right? So unless there's some difference, how do you how do you get anything out of it? Right? If I buy a product for €1 and I sell it for €1, where was the gain? I buy it for one, I sell it for 10. Okay, now we're talking some gain. Right? You know what I'm saying? Let us say we have a band. Okay, so the band is there on the stage, but everybody's all one, so everybody from the audience comes up on the stage and picks up things and, you know, bangs on things, and the band goes down into the audience, and everybody just does what everybody does. Anything's going to happen? No. Something happens because there's a band, there's an audience. Right? The greater the difference, but that is within relationship, the greater the experience. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, what's the responsibility of the
priest in doing yajnas.
What is the responsibility of the priest in doing yajnas?
Yeah.
Meaning, means he should perform the ritual, you know, he should be the one pouring the ghee, chanting the mantras.
Yeah, but like in what level he's taking the karma of the...
What level does he take the karma of the yajamats?
Yeah.
You sure you want to discuss this one?
Well, briefly, if you can.
See, the priest then is known, I mean, can be known as the acharya. It means he takes the karma. Right? Means you perform the ritual, then the result of it's with you, though you haven't gotten the karma from the person. You know what I'm saying? A priest does something for someone else on their behalf. The results of that worship are therefore with the priest. He's gotten the benefit because he did the worship, he has the results. Right? Now when the yajaman, or the person doing the, you know, who's sponsoring the yajna, when they give a dakshin to the priest, that's when then the result of the, how you say, the yajna is given to the yajaman. Right? Like that. And at the same time, that's when the karma of the yajaman goes to the priest. Right? So it goes basically through the dakshin. Like that. That's why priests are supposed to be very solid, you know, devotees in sadhana and spiritually situated, so that they can, you know, deal with that. You know what I'm saying? So to get someone who's not very situated well in sadhana, who's very materialistic, then it's said that it'll be like trying to cross, you know, a body of water in a boat made by stone. Right? Both the priest and the yajaman will go down. Right? That's why in the Vedic that it's qualified priests. Right? It means you hear of a lot of people taking up being priests, but you don't hear about them for long. You know what I'm saying? So the outside materialistic Hindus, you know, take it up. How long do you hear about them? Not very long. Because if they're materialistic, they can't last very long. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So then the point is the money will carry. So if it is used for yourself, then that means you get the karma. If the money is given to the temple, that means it goes to the you know, it disappears there. Like that. But something will be gotten. Just that you've been the priest, you'll get something. Right? Right? Even if you have the guru, he's doing initiations and he has a priest doing the yajna. The priest also gets some of the karma of the initiates. Right? In other words, it's not a great... In other words, it's not a business opportunity. Right? That's why yajnas and that are not for vaishyas. They can do their own yajnas, but they don't do for anyone else, because if it was, then you'd see big, you know, multinational yajna, you know, programs set up by, you know, very enterprising businessmen. But it's, you don't see it, it never happens, because if they did take it up, very quickly they'd be destroyed, so they can't do it. It's only by austerity then you can burn these things off. So that's why it's given to Brahmins to do. Right? Brahmins take on students because you take on karma. Like that. Does that make sense?
And then this is the point of doing the yajna properly or not properly.
Properly is better than recommended.
But I have heard that there is a statement that there is no greater danger than yajna done improperly.
Anything that you do materially, if it's done improperly, is dangerous. You cut the potatoes improperly, you know, you end up with a lot of bandages. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Material means that there's dangers. Material world's dangerous. So anything you deal with it, you do it right, then there's no problem. You do it wrong, there's always a problem. You ride a bicycle wrong, it's dangerous. You drive a car wrong, it's dangerous. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that whatever you're going to do, do it right. That's why this specialization in the Varnashram system is, therefore everybody's good at it. Right? because that's what you do. You're a priest, you preach, or you do sacrifices, or like that, then you're good at it. Right? So therefore, then you can do it properly. Someone else will administrate, someone else will do business, someone else does these other things. Then they're good at it. Right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah.
Maharaj, there is this list about different rasas, and some of emotions that it seems to me like rasas are not included in this list. For example, like sadness or lust.
Because these are all transitory things. You understand? Could you hear?
Yeah.
Huh? You got it? Everyone heard? So the point is these are, if you look in the list, the Nectar Devotion, the Sanchari Babas, then you'll find them there. Right? Means you have your Stai Baba, which is the main rasa, right? And that can be supported by these seven secondary rasas. Then you'll have the Vibhava, which will generate the rasa, right? It's what the impetus for the rasa happening, right? Then you'll have the Anubhava, which will be the experience gained from the interaction, right? Then you'll have the Sattvika Bhavas, which will be the physical reactions that will happen. And then you'll have the the Sanchari Bhavas, which are different mental states. There's 33 of them. So you'll find these things in there. Because those just keep moving and all that. It's not a state of relationship, generally. That's why you base a relationship on sadness. It's not, you know, or lust or greed, or they're not something there. Those will come up in, you know what I'm saying? But you can base it on friendship or parental or conjugal or even secondary rasas. It's not so strong, but it's generally a support. But like, let's say, chivalry or, laughter. You know, like a group of boys get together and all they do is make jokes and laugh. But they may or may not actually be real friends. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, if something happens or goes wrong, then, you know, nobody knows who you are. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that friendship is the actual basis of the relationship. Does that make sense? So generally in the material world, most people are only tasting secondary rasas, not even primary rasas. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means two people are sitting watching a movie, you're watching the movie. What's your relationship? You know what I'm saying? So your relationship is through the movie. So what's the rasa? You understand? Like that. So friendship is something different. Or parental is something different. Or conjugal is something different. Right? Movie's going on, the mother still never stops thinking about the child. That's parental rasa. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, what happens when the soul leaves the body? Like sometimes you hear that there are these nadis within the body, so what is their relationship with one leaving the body, and can one's destination be somehow determined by the omens or symptoms of what's happening at the moment of death?
Is that important?
It's maybe not so important, but it's interesting.
So many things are interesting. You know, the neighbor's daughter is very interesting. You know, but is it important? You know what I'm saying? So, means that we want to use the intellect, and that's fine, but the point is that nadis are just where the movement of energy goes through, right? It means that the life force has to move through the body. That's what actually makes it work. So the nadis are there, you know, like that. But otherwise, to be able to tell, maybe there is some tantric science to understand, or maybe the Yoga Shastra explains. But for us, it's either you've gone back to Godhead or you didn't. Right? So Krishna explains, if you've taken up devotional service, but haven't become so steady and you become distracted by material desire, then you go to the heavenly planets. If you've taken up devotional service, have become steady, but still didn't perfect your life, you take birth in the family of devotees. Right? And those who went to the heavenly planet come back and are born in, you know, wealthier, aristocratic, or noble families. Right? And if you practice devotional service, you perfect that, then, you know, you remember Krishna, then you go back to Godhead. Right? So that's what's important for us. But exactly which nadi? There's 72,000 nadis. So are you going to get into studying that? Or yeah, okay. So then the whole thing won't be there. If you take the seven nadis, otherwise, how are you going to know where they went out? You know what I'm saying? Like that. I mean, it's basically, it's like this. It means, yeah, it's not so important, really. Okay? Like that. You know, if they pop out the top of the head and then the body bursts into flames, there's a good chance that, you know, they definitely went somewhere higher than the Earth planet. Yes.
Related to this soul, Maharaj. So
this soul?
The soul, soul.
Oh, the soul, not the soul, that soul.
Not
okay.
Soul one. So nowadays, like so many medical advances are there, like the tissue they increase out of body and so many things. So how do you say that? Is there soul there also, or how it is? Consciousness is there in that.
Yeah, but no, but the tissue is growing on something. It's growing on a rat or a pig. It's not growing on its own. You know what I'm saying? They'll grow a human ear on the back of a rat or something. Then they'll put it on somebody. It's not growing on its own. You know what I'm saying? They don't have a petri dish and there's an ear growing in there or a liver or something. That's what they talk about, they like to do, but it's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you have hybrids. You know, you crossbreed and do different things, but there's a point at which it won't go any further. You know what I'm saying? Like you can cross a horse and a donkey, right? You'll get a mule, but that's where it ends. Because mules are neuters. You can't have any children. You know what I'm saying? So all these things, you take flowers and all that, you can cross and do this and that, but once it turns purple, that's the end of the line. You can't do anything more with it. You understand? So there's a limit on what they can do. Like that. So even though they'll talk about, you know, growing organs and, you know, and like that, you go down to your Tesco's and pick up a new kidney or stuff like that, then that's not going to happen. Does that make sense? On the other side is you could say something like cloning. Okay, they make another soul, another soul enters that body, but that cloning has been, that kind of thing's always been going on. A lot of animals work by cloning. Right? They don't create, they just clone whatever they have themselves. Or let's say you have a tree. Some trees you can cut the branch and put it in the ground. So when you cut the branch, means there's an opportunity, means as long as it's connected to the soul that's in the roots. So when you cut it, it's an opportunity for another soul to enter. Right? So another soul will enter, now you put it in the ground, it may grow, may not grow, but you know what I'm saying? There's souls everywhere, like that. Here you may or may not see it. It's obvious, but let us say, yeah, means, you've been in India? Yeah. Okay, is there any place empty in India? Is there any place you can get out of the way? You know, it's like here, you know, you get something you want to eat, you go to a park, get out of the way, find a bench where there's no people. Is there such a place in India? No, someone lives under that bench, right? They made a house out of it, right? You know what I'm saying? So the point is, as soon as there's an opportunity that someone could live there, it'll be taken. So there's rules that therefore certain means they can be generated from in different ways. So as long as it follows that rules, then another soul can enter that. Like you have a worm, you cut the worm in half, then you have two worms. So that means the side of the worm that had the soul in it, that remains the same worm. The other side, then another soul enters that, and then it's a different soul. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of the ways that you can make more worms, that's all. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is, you know. You take plants, you divide them up, and then you get more. You know what I'm saying? You take cuttings or like that. So it's just one of the methods that can be there. Right? So generally the cuttings and all that are off of plants. But there is ways that you can do it off of, you know, other animals. So then it's not something unique or special, it's always been there. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what do you call it? There was one child in, I forget who it was, womb. Yeah, I think Aditi's womb. One. So there was one soul there. Indra came in with a thunderbolt because he was thinking this child, because the child was being produced to give him trouble. Right? Unless it was Aditi's womb. I don't remember what. So then he went in there with his thunderbolt, cut it up into 49 pieces. Right? So that means the original soul was in one of them, and 47 or 48 other souls came and took up the other parts. And so then he ended up with, you know, how you say, 47 maroots, right? 49. Huh? 49. So then he ended up with 49 brothers instead of one. Does that make sense? So this has been going on a long time, so that they say that it's something new, it's not something so special. You know what I'm saying? They're very advanced, but it doesn't mean that it's outside of God's creation. Right? It means they can't explain it, so therefore that doesn't mean that you know, it's still outside the creation. You know what I'm saying? You can't explain why the tsunami came and wiped out, you know, so many places. But it's still part of God's creation. Okay. Is that okay?
Continuing the subject matter, Maharaj, is there a soul in every single cell in the body, let's say, human body? Or
is there a soul in every cell of the body? There doesn't need to be. Why does it need to be?
Some people say it's understand.
No, there's plenty of living entities in your body, but it's not just the individual cells. It's just like you have one tree, so there's one major living entity that runs it, but in there there's all kinds of bugs in the bark and worms and other things that are living there and bacteria, so they're secondary, they're just living on the body, but they're not actually conscious of or in control of the body. Does that make sense? So there'll be so many living entities, but it's, you know, if you have a one cell living entity, yes, then there's a soul in that one cell. But we're, you know, multiple cell living entities, so there's one soul for all those cells. But like your whole, you know, digestive system is all full of all kinds of living entities. They do all the work there, right? You know, so like that, there's plenty of living entities that are inside. Just you're the one that's conscious of the whole body and in control of it, while they're not. So even though you're outnumbered, you're still in control. Don't worry. Is that okay? Means there's a super soul in every atom, but you know, so that you don't. That's another thing.
Then what about heart transplanted or kidney transplanted? It's still alive, and it's accepted by the recipient.
Alive means it's just matter that's in a condition that it could be, right? But they, you know, they don't do a leg transplant or, you know what I'm saying? It's only within the rules that's allowed. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that the heart itself is something separate or contains a soul. It's just part. That's why you have a very few moments. Just like on yourself. You cut yourself, if you put the skin back together within a certain amount of time, it will heal and continue as it is. If not, then it will dry up and fall off. So it's the same way. There's just, you have a very, very short time. You know? Like that. Is that okay?
I have one more question. if animals are or plants, all those below humans, do not have free will, then why do some animals suffer more than the others?
Why do some animals suffer more than other animals? It's dependent on what karma that they did before as humans. You know what I'm saying? Let us say one was a pious person, but one had some faults that would, let's say, make one an animal. So one might be an animal on the heavenly planets, or an animal in a good situation. But it doesn't, you know, but it'll depend upon the karma as a human being. It's nothing to do with what they are doing as an animal. Does that make sense?
So from heavenly planets, one comes down as human first.
That's a human on the heavenly planets, but an animal on the heavenly planets, then they're just spending their time as an animal. You have to be an animal, so you could be an animal here, you could be an animal up, you could be an animal down. You just, you know, you're an animal somewhere. Does that make sense?
Yes, but do animals also have their karma?
Animals are human beings who, the result of their activities as human beings is that they should become an animal. You know what I'm saying? Just like someone who likes to walk around naked, then they become a tree. Right? Because trees are naked, right? No one goes, oh no, the trees don't have any clothes. No, everyone's perfectly comfortable. But human beings, if they're naked, people get upset. So therefore they like that. So if they were a pious person who liked to walk around naked, then they might be in a very nice place, nice garden, or, you know, someplace like that. But if they're not, then they'll be in some place that's not so nice. Does that make sense?
Connected to this, what you said, is what's the ultimate purpose of modesty and chastity?
What's the ultimate purpose of modesty and chastity?
Other than moral?
Other than moral. Chastity means, if you connect yourself to one person, means then the depth of your relationship is much greater. Right? If you think about it, does a girl want a shallow relationship with a man? Right? Does she want it to just be on the bodily platform? Or does she want it to include the emotional platform? Does she want to feel that it's temporary or that it would last? Right? Is she comfortable that, you know, there's no security? No. So chastity then naturally ensures those things. Right? Does that make sense? Means the degree you're focused on something to the degree the result you get. So the more you're focused on one thing, the more result you can get from it. So if chastity is there, then that means then the amount of interaction in a relationship that you can get is greater. Right? Modesty also then generates the masculine nature. You know what I'm saying? Modesty means that there'll be some, how do you say? Obstacle to the fulfillment of someone's desires. Right? Isn't it? So that means then other people have to be more outgoing. Does that make sense? So modesty and chastity actually generate relationship. If you don't have them, then you might get some physical interaction, but that's where it'll end. Right? A girl who's not modest, not chaste, may, you know, have a lot of close relationships, but nothing of any substance will ever be there. Can't be. Because there's nothing there to generate. You know what I'm saying? You can't generate something out of thin air. Right? I have no vegetables, I can't cook something. Right? I have no money, I can't generate a business. So if I don't have chastity or modesty, how am I going to generate a relationship? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah. But men in the West, they are not even expecting modesty.
They're not expecting modesty, but the girl that's not modest, then on Monday morning they're telling their friends what a, you know, easy lay it was. They don't respect non-modest girls. Right? You have fun with the girl that's not modest, you marry the one that is. Right? Who wants a girl that's not modest or not chaste? But boys nowadays aren't sense controlled, so they're very willing to have a lot of fun. So since the girls are making it so easily available, they're taking full advantage. Right? The point is previously you wanted to get close to that girl down the block that you really liked, you had to marry her. Then you could get close. And then that marriage lasted a lifetime. Because it was not easy. That's the point. Modesty means there's work, and something you have to work for, you're going to value more. Something that's no work, then hey, you know, it's good for a one night stand, maybe a couple of nights, and then that's it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's the whole point, is that, you know, the modern culture is not designed to generate relationships. That's what we were saying. It's not meant for that. You know, like that. So what to do? So these, you know, how you say, easy girls and desperate boys, then they find each other, but there's no substance in the relationship. A girl can never be happy in the long run. It may be fun for a few years, but after a while, then it kind of gets a little old. You know what I'm saying? You know.
What is its ultimate purpose in Krishna consciousness?
What is its purpose in Krishna consciousness? Is that if the relationship between husband and wife are deep enough, then, and it's observed properly, then, you know, with intelligence, then you can see what is the difference between material and spiritual. Because as it is, probably you'd find most people, even though they may have so much sensual interaction, are not in any way satisfied. So therefore they were thinking if it was like this or like that, or, you know, some, they make some variation in it, then I'll become, and but they never do. But the point is if the proper rules are followed, then whatever is the closeness or depth that you can get will be obtained. Then that can be seen and compared to, you know, spiritual activities. Then you can say, whatever depth there is in the relationship, I've experienced that, and still it's not as great as Krishna consciousness. But as it is, devotees don't experience, so therefore there's always that idea maybe something's there. You know what I'm saying? So technically, renunciation sometimes may mean that they become frustrated, so therefore, you know, it can't be obtained. So that's good, in that they'll take up devotional service and get very dynamic. But unfortunately, then if an opportunity comes along that is in line with what they think will be nice, then it may be taken. Does that make sense? So that's one of the, I mean, that's if you apply it, I was thinking that you meant that chastity and modesty, you meant girls. Right, yeah, because you can't apply it in other ways like that. You know, it's just like if someone's modest, then other people appreciate their qualities, so it generates relationship. You know, but if they're not modest, they're proud and arrogant, then a few other arrogant people may kind of like, you know, with chivalry have a relationship, but it's not very deep. You know what I'm saying? But modesty, others appreciate, then they make that step forward, because you're not, they are. But that means real modesty, not, you know, feign to get a reaction like that. That doesn't always work. Does that make sense? Or chaste, we're chaste to our guru, to the philosophy, to Krishna, to like that. So point is it's the same thing. It's then the depth of relationship is there. So through chastity and modesty, then depth of relationship and, a forum for relationship are generated. Does that make sense? means chastity deepens the relationship and maintains it, like that. Modesty will generate opportunities for interaction. Does that make sense? So the point is, if you're modest, then someone who appreciates modesty will notice. So in other words, if a girl's modest and nobody notices, she's in the wrong group. She should go hang out somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So if nobody appreciates your modesty or chastity, change friends. Because those friends won't be friends anyway after 6 months or a year, this or that. So why bother? Why waste your time? Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, in Mahabharata there is mentioned that the morality, if I recall it properly, the morality should not go above the religion. So could you kind of elaborate what does it mean and like what we should be aware about that warning related to our society development? Just
that morality going above religion.
Yeah.
We see what Bhagavatam starts off as Upadharma. Chala means that is not in line with Krishna consciousness or religion is kicked out. Right? So basically you have five stages of consciousness. So you have, you know, your self-centered stage, sensual stage, the first. Second is extended sense gratification. You worry about others' sense gratification. It's still sense gratification. Third is you're actually dealing with people based on the actual nature that they have. You know, it's not sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? It's a difference. Like, I pet the dog because then the dog will be happy. That's pranamoy. I pet the dog because that's how you can interact with the dog, because that's what else do you do with the dog? You know what I'm saying? That's understanding the nature of the dog. So it's a different thing. So we see the pranamoy will have a weakness, is that only when I'm inspired is it acting. But the religion means that's how you're supposed to deal, whether I'm inspired to or not. So therefore the quality of interaction will be higher. Modern man, of course, it says, you know, Krishna says in the Gita, you know, irreligion will be seen as religion, religion is irreligion. So therefore the element that by following duty it will actually create a better environment and better relationships, that the modern kind of like thinking can't understand, like that, because it's springing from a, you know, an impure source. That's all. So the morality is on that second platform. It's actually part of artha, right? Niti, artha, those are on the same platform. So morality is there because without morality, how do you have economics, right? If you make your money and then everybody else steals it and that's okay, then how are you going to make money, right? Or you've got a house and everybody else comes and moves in. No, so there's got to be rules that what I have gained through my endeavors is mine, right? And if I want to share it, then that's nice. So if I'm a nice person, I give it away in charity, but then it's a morality thing. But if I give it because I'm supposed to give in charity as a human being, I generate economics, therefore I give in charity, then that's dharma. It's a completely different thing, right? So morality is actually just another aspect of economics, right? You can't mean, like, let's say you have a country that's under civil war, right? There's no morality, so therefore there's no economics. And outside people with money, until they're sure that there's going to be protection and morality, they won't go into the country, right? So many companies won't go into a country that doesn't have copyright laws, right? Because they'll go in, they'll bring out their movie or their music, and then within a few days then the whole country has it because somebody copied it and sold it for half the price. So they don't go into the country. You know what I'm saying? So morality is important for that. That's why you'll see those who are like the bureaucrats, the business persons, generally they're the most stuck on morality because that's how their systems work. Right? Kshatriya is worried about dharma, and you know, so you're supposed to be moral. That's part of your dharma. So that's why it looks similar, but it's actually different. Because when push comes to shove, then a kshatriya will give up everything to maintain the dharma, you know, or the morality. But a vaishya won't. You know what I'm saying? Means a vaishya will sell his soul if it'll make money. And then he's sitting there laughing, you know, at all the people who kept their dignity and have no money. And he's thinking, well, hey, I got the money. Look at what they got. They got nothing. I'm enjoying myself. They got nothing. So it's just, the nature can go that way. So you'll generally find, therefore, as you introduce more of the bourgeois culture, that morality becomes actually the social force behind it, rather than religion or the importance of liberation or devotion, like that. So what one has to do is that morality is to support religion, because otherwise, then how do you judge? Just like, let us say, if in a court of law, by you giving testimony, someone's going to die from that. Like if I say, oh, this person saw it, their life is put in jeopardy. So that's not considered moral, that's considered sinful. So therefore the lie would be considered moral. You know what I'm saying? Yudhishthira Maharaj makes that point. In a normal situation, then you do everything according to the rules. But in an abnormal situation, sometimes the opposite is actually the rule. And to follow the rule, that would be improper. So it takes fine intelligence to see that, you know. So it's not an easy thing like that. That's why one must be, you know, contemplative and must be mature. Then one can make a proper decision, you know, on what would be correct or not. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Let's say, ideally the husband makes the money, the wife doesn't have to make money. She can take care of the house and kids. Let us say that there isn't enough money, so unless she makes money, then her children starve. So if you look at it, the nature, the religion of a mother is to take care of her children. Therefore, it would be proper for her to get a job, or for her to not, and stay at home and say, well, I don't because the wife doesn't get a job, and then have her children die of starvation. That wouldn't be religious. You understand? But at the same time, if it's just the husband's greedy, so he wants more money and he forces his wife to, you know, have a job, that's improper. So you have to see actually what is accomplished by the activity. What's the mentality behind it? What's the motive behind it? Then you can see what's religious and what's moral and what's not. Right? Does that make sense? Also, there's a rule, at least in the Vedic, that one cycle of Jupiter, I think that's 12 years, that if someone hasn't performed, you know, this activity for that long, then it's considered that they're you know, cleared from that, so should never be brought up again. Right? If someone atones, goes through the atonement process, then afterwards it's never brought up that they were sinful. Right? That's Vedic. Because otherwise, then at any time, any person who feels a little bit morally inspired, then can create problems. Right? Because as we mentioned, morality is in the class of extended sense gratification. So sense gratification is important for you, but because you throw it onto someone else, then you make it special. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the kids are starving in Somalia, so we're feeding them. Okay, but they're feeding the kids, that's nice, this extended sense gratification. But it's not that they're really worried about the social structure that the kids are having to live in, and the environment. You know what I'm saying? So they're not trying to stop the wars or other causes. Some are, but generally you'll find they're just happy that they fed the kids and that's all. You know what I'm saying? But the difficulties in the social structure that are against the religious principles that have created that, that's they're not worried about. you know, because that's what Brahmas and Kshatriyas look at. Does that make sense? So one has to be very, very careful that it's just like you have niti. Niti Shastra is if you're attacked by an aggressor, then you can kill them. Right? Dharma Shastra also agrees with that, but at the same time there's the element of forgiveness. So Krishna's saying, hey, Drona and Kripa, and they're aggressors. So even though you, and Bhishma, even though you say they're superior, according to Niti, they can be killed. You know, Arjuna is saying that from Dharma, that no, they're superior, so they must always be respected. Right? Krishna didn't after that say, no. In other words, there's a level of consciousness for everybody. Right? So, therefore, someone on pranamoya, then that will be the platform. It regulates it and it makes everything balanced. But still, it has to be balanced according to that. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you have something like now, the law is so overbalanced that a criminal has more rights than a righteous citizen. Right? Means, let us say someone breaks into your house, I don't know about here, but there are, I think, you know, countries, I think America is like that or someplace. The criminal breaks into your house and steals the stuff, and maybe on the way out you hit them with something and they get an injury. They can sue you. I heard of a case where a thief, you know, he was stealing and all that, and because then the owner either came or that, he got scared and then ran out of the house quick, jumped out of a window. You know, but it was a low window, and he didn't realize it was higher than what he expected, and he got hurt, and he sued the person and won. So that is called an absolute total misapplication of this so-called morality and justice, because a free citizen should feel protected. So who feels protected? That means administration isn't going properly. Right? People, the common person must feel protected, and the criminals should feel fearful. And now if criminals are very competent, the common person's fearful. So that means something's wrong. You know what I'm saying? So that's why in the Vedic that you can take a platform, but it's balanced. You know what I'm saying? It's balanced. It's not, in other words, religion is not based on sentiment. It appeals to the mind, but it's not sentiment, because it's according to rules. Morality generally is sentiment. Just because you feel, if I feel compassionate, I am. If I don't feel compassionate, I don't do anything. But religion means you feel compassion or not, that's how you're supposed to deal. Does that make sense? Like that. Is that okay?
In the verse books, they are mentioned that he cannot offer so manufactured.
Cannot offer what?
Manufactured items, teas. And about this frozen food.
What about frozen food?
It's also,
it depends upon whether it's been pre-cooked or not. You know, if it's not pre-cooked, then generally that should be okay. Anything pre-cooked is always considered impure. You know what I'm saying? Anything that's partially cooked or things like that, then that's not considered so pure. But if it comes between no vegetables and frozen vegetables, then you use frozen vegetables. You know what I'm saying? Means if you were, you know, it's just like here, we're within 5 minutes of the ocean. So if this ocean was the Mediterranean, then you wouldn't have to worry about this rule. Then we can say definitely no frozen vegetables. You know what I'm saying? But seeing up here that, you know, on a good day, you know, you have a potato and a cabbage, you know, like that, then, you know, frozen vegetables may need to be used. In other words, if you can get fresh vegetables, you do. If you can't, then you use them. Yeah, so don't worry about it. Because that's not technically manufactured. It means that you've created into something finished product. So frozen vegetable, you know, no one, you don't see the brahmacharis when no one's looking going out and getting a pack of frozen peas and taking it back to the ashram and ripping it open and then all just, you know, not doing that. No. Like that. Ice cream maybe, but not frozen peas. Yeah.
Somebody asked tulasi seeds.
And tulasi seeds.
Yes. Asked that he or she can grow them. Just tulasi seeds.
Yeah, yeah. As long as they take care.
Yeah. So he or she have some following rules and regulations like we do.
Yeah, it means if you're going to grow tulsi, then you should take care of her. Like that. So if they're going to properly, you know, take care of them, they can grow.
Yeah. And cleanliness in your kitchen, there is mention also that you have clean clothes, and then they take and accept the suffering.
Yeah, no. I mean, before it used to be is that whatever. Means previously the standard was is whatever standard of cleanliness was required on the altar is what was required in the kitchen. Because the kitchen is an extension of the altar. Like that. So you can follow like that, that's nice. The point is clean, you know, clean clothes, clean hands, you know, clean feet, all these things. Is that okay?
Maharaj, there is a statement that one should not discuss one's plans because it may happen that these plans will not get fulfilled because of this talking. So, just wondering how this goes together in temple and in ISKCON level. We have all kind of plans which we are advertising and promoting temple projects and this and that.
But you're giving general, you're not giving detail. In other words, detail is only amongst those persons that need to know that. You know? But otherwise, you say you plan to do a temple, but you don't get into exactly the details, how it will be made. It's money in that, unless someone's going to be giving money. You know what I'm saying? So that way you have to find the balance. You know what I'm saying? Is it okay?
Maharaj, the shyness of woman is very much valued in Vedic culture, but there is also another kind of shyness, which is because of false ego, because you are afraid that if you make a mistake, then you're like so can you tell me a little bit difference between these two shyness?
Between the two shynesses.
Because the other one is from false ego, because you are afraid of getting yourself in bad light.
One you could say is false ego, the other you can say is the inherent nature of women. You know what I'm saying? False ego means it's an activity you should do, but you don't do it because you're afraid that you won't do it as well as you'd like, therefore your false ego won't handle it if there's any less result. You know, if after leading the kirtan, then, you know, everybody doesn't pick you up on their shoulders and, you know, take you around the temple, or after you give the class, people don't stand up and clap, or like that, then you don't want to give. So then that's false ego. Shyness in women, that's just their nature, is that because the mentality is moves, it oscillates. Therefore, excitement creates, how you say? Interest in something creates a generating an external mood of non-interest. You know what I'm saying? Need something else. When it gets to need, there's no shyness. But when there's shyness, then there's interest. You know what I'm saying? That's just the feminine nature. That's how it works. It has to. Otherwise, how do you get subject and object? Krishna's masculine. He's forward. So the gopis are shy and create obstacles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's just that's the way energy works, right? You know, you see energy, it always goes like this. Right? Electricity goes like this, everything goes like that. That's how energy works. Does that make sense?
In the morning class, you brought up the topic. It was a short topic about interaction between man and woman, and it was about the quarrel, that this is like the biggest extreme the relationship can be like taken. And you've mentioned that this is another subject matter, but it seems to be interesting how to like move in this realm so that the relationship is proper.
It means how to deal. It's kind of like, you know, you have the rest of the night. Basically, okay. It means we'll explain stuff, whether you catch it or not, that's another thing. But, you know, the explanation may generate more questions than, you know, than the answer. Point is that, I say, because the means Krishna's masculine, right? So then he is secure, he's independent. He expands his creation, which is feminine. It's not independent, it's dependent. Right? So therefore security is knowing that dependent means that there's, how do you say? The better the connection, the more secure the feminine aspect. Right? The more secure, the more comfortable. Right? And so, but the same time is because of the nature of not being, how you say, independent, of being dependent, then there's always that possibility of insecurity. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, it's a constant, how you say, what would be the word? It's a constant, like underlying thought in the feminine nature to ensure their security. Right? And since they're attached, they generally take security as mutual attachment. Right? Like that. So even though it's understood that the masculine is independent and that's appreciated, their independence, the symptoms of attachment must be there. If at any point the symptoms of attachment are not manifest, then the feminine nature becomes insecure. Right? And insecure, so a man becomes angry because he's trying to do something and gaining the result is frustrated. Right? So for a woman, that's not what's important to them. Anytime there's insecurity, because that's gain for them, is security. Whenever there's anything that may create insecurity, that's when they get upset. That's when they get angry. Does that make sense? Therefore, if a woman's angry, it means there's something that has created an insecurity for her. Right? And the only way a man can get through that is through humility. Right? Nothing else will do it. Like that. Don't even try. Like that. The men can sit around down at the pub and decide what's actually going to work with women. But that has absolutely nothing to do with reality. What works with women is what the women say works with women. And so even if you're wrong and they're angry, you have to be humble. It's just the way it is. Like that. Like it or not, it's the only way that works. Like that. So that's the rule. Shakuntala mentions that as a principle of Dharma. Is that, you know, a cultured man, even when angry, never says or deals in any way to displease his women. Even when angry. They never do. Because a woman's angry is based on insecurity. it's not that they want anything to go. It's based on insecurity. They tell you, get out of here. That's because you act in a way that it appears that you want to go. So they're insecure. So then they're saying that, but that's not what they mean. Right? That's the whole point of the, you know, you say this, but you mean that. So I don't know if we were here or we were somewhere. If it was saying is if a woman ever is straightforward, take it seriously. And don't expect it to happen anytime soon. But if they're straight and they tell you this is the way it is, don't joke with it, don't talk about the past, don't deflect the subject, make small of it, take it very seriously and deal with it right now, then it'll work. You don't, then door closes and doesn't open for a long time. Otherwise, once every 3 months, you might see some, you know, really straight wings. What they feel and what they say is in the same place at the same time. Otherwise, it's expected the man will figure it out. That's his business, right? Women don't like men who can't figure out the nuances, right? That it just annoys them, right? That's why a woman is 4 times more clever. That's why they like cleverness in men. The man's clever, figures it out, then they figure this guy's worthwhile. Man's too dull, not interesting. You understand? So the point is things are at a particular, and so security is like this, is that it's at this level of happiness now. But then there's always the element that happiness always increases. That's the nature of the soul, so that's the nature of energy. So if it's this much now, then it wants to be that much more. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, you will say, you don't say anything, they dressed up, they don't say anything, right? Then they'll say, oh, you know, you didn't say anything, you know, about dress. Oh, no, it looks very nice. Right? And then they're happy you said something. The next time, okay, I should say something. So you say, oh, it looks very nice. Then they're happy, right? Because then that one is that had to be generated, right? And this time it came from yourself. Then the next time after that, you say, oh, very nice. And they say, oh, you're just saying that. It's kind of like, what happened? You know, last time, formula, 1,379 was when she dresses up, you say, hey, look great. But now she says, oh, you don't mean that. You're just saying that. Then it's kind of like, you have to mean it. In other words, what they're doing is, they're happy that you said it, but they, because they're happy that it's been said, they want to experience that happiness. Therefore, they'll say, oh, you're just saying that. And then if you say, hey, why are you being so trippy? Then, that's it, nice finish. But if you say, no, I really mean that, like that, and this and that, then everything's nice. Right? And then the next time, you'll say, oh, it looks very nice. They'll say, oh, you're just saying that. And then you say, okay, 1,337.1. Now you say, no, you look really nice. And you say, no, you don't think so. It's kind of like, now what, It says, no, it's sad now. Oh, no, but she looks better and all that because you commented once about some lady, 2 years ago that she wore a nice sari, so you think she looks better. So then it's like, it says, no, that's that, that's just that. It's just, it was looking, what are these, that, blah, blah. And in other words, you have to think very fast and be very sincere, and then everything goes fine. And you don't, then, you'll know about it. You will be disciplined. Right? So, that's just the way it is. That's why they're created. Krishna expands his energy to increase happiness, right? So that's what they do. So whatever it is, then it's increased. Like that. So that's why it'll never... there'll never be the same reaction twice in any given situation. If you expect that, get a dog or something. Like that. Not a cat, but a dog. They always the same thing. Get out the ball, they're ready to run. Wag the tail when you come home, lick your face, okay, Good, then that's it, So if you want to deal with women, then know that every moment will be different than every other moment. That's all.
Just recognize that in the morning you said that women tend to go for a fight.
Like tend to. Means it's like this. You deal with economics, right? Okay. So when the market is peaking, what happens? When the market is up, what happens? It just keeps going. That's the way, you know, since the Roman time, the market's just been going through the roof, right? As soon as it goes, then it goes down. Right? And if it's on an upward swing, in other words, dealing, then it drops and then it goes higher than it was before. So that's how it works. In other words, it's going nice, then they will generate a fight just to take it higher. But if you're not humble and not sincere, then it goes out, then you have, you know, how you say, you know, 9/11, you know, just it goes out the bottom, you know, or, you know, 1929, you know, that was even worse, you know. In other words, you're dealing with such a refined thing that if you deal with it right, you'll get such a better result. But you don't deal with it right, you get a worse result. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So anything sophisticated works like that. You know what I'm saying? You have a 14-cylinder Ferrari, you can get a lot more out of it because it's so sophisticated. But if it's not dealt with right, you'll get nothing out of it. You know, might as well have a 1-cylinder, you know, diesel thing, and that'll be more stable. You understand? So that's the point. You want to get involved with women, then this is what you're getting involved with. Right? The men sit around and think what women should be. That absolutely 101% doesn't matter. Because that's not what it is. That's not the reality. Does that make sense? Okay.
What about the position of women in a call or difference you were talking about men? Because we are always told in India that even if your husband is wrong, be quiet. Don't.
Yeah, you be quiet. You get him some other way.
I mean, be humble. It's what
yeah, you be humble, but at the same time as you're humble, it doesn't mean that you don't put him in line. It's just that's the more pleasant way of dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? If you can do that, then that makes it easier. But still, these things that I'm mentioning about the men still apply. It just makes it a little bit more pleasant and smooth if the women will also deal. But the principles of the male-female relationship, that doesn't change. It's just whether it's a little bit more rocky or it's a little bit more smooth. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, because the point is okay, the woman doesn't say something, then what does that do? Right? Right? When you're upset, you might say something. When you're really upset, you say nothing. Right? And that silence, that creates the most uneasiness. Isn't it? So therefore, pleasant, nice, serving prasad, doing everything, but you're not interacting the way you normally do. So that means then the man knows something went wrong here. So then, you know, he'll try to figure it out. He's smart. If he's not, then... like that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, as pleasant as you can make that process, the better. Because otherwise... if the man is basically dutiful and all those things, but he's still attached to a nice environment, a pleasant environment. So that's why he's in family life. So the more pleasant you can make it, though still the same principles are being followed, then there's less chance of them getting frustrated. Because the more you don't follow that, even though he still has to follow the same principles in dealing with the woman, it takes a much more advanced person to be able to see through it. You know what I'm saying? The anger of a woman that is directed at the man, men don't interpret that as attachment. But that's what it is. A woman's not attached, she couldn't care less. So therefore, half of the symptoms of a woman's attachment are actually what men would call negative. Right? So therefore, the less you push that, though the environment is created, you know, in other words, it's not as wild, generally, then it will work on the broadest range of men. You know, so unless you have an extremely qualified husband, then you can take it through a really serious roller coaster ride and it'll still work. But if he's not, then the more rough it is, the more chance you lose them, because they're not actually advanced enough to understand what's going on. That's why it says a first class brahmachari will make a first class grihastha. Right? So if he's a good brahmachari, well trained, all that, then you can go for it. But, you know, if someone's so trained, there's no need to. Right? Does that make sense? And the less they're trained, then if you use these, then the more chance it is they won't be able to hold on, because they themselves are not strong enough. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. What could be the common factor that there are in most of the divorces which are increasing?
I would say it's probably the dissatisfaction of the women, meaning the men don't know what they're doing. Men don't know what women are, don't know how to deal with them. Women will follow the men if the men behave properly. Right? If a man's going somewhere, a woman wants to follow. She wants to be part of something. That's the meaning of being dependent. If something's happening, you want to be part of that. Like, you know, the women don't generate the happening. They generate the need for it, or the impetus for it. But the men have to do it. And that's the point. They're active, the women are passive. Right? Passive means doesn't mean they don't do something. Passive means is that the man takes the first step, then the woman responds to that. Right? So that's the point, is then whatever the man wants from the woman means he's got to do it first. That's what I was saying in this thing with the argument. Even though the man's wrong, was right, and the woman's wrong, then he may take the, most men will take the platform, I'm right, I'm not backing down this time, you know, she's got to get it together. But then that means he's leading by being stubborn in his determination. That means she will follow his example by being determined in hers. So it's an impasse. So if he wants her to be humble, he's got to be humble first. So if he takes the humble position, and that, and then what elements are wrong, in other words, he's done something wrong emotionally, maybe not logically or legally he's done anything wrong, but the tone of voice he used, or word he used, or the lack of, you know, emotion, or the wrong emotion, that's wrong in the girl, in the woman's mind. So therefore, she becomes upset because it touches on the security element. So maybe she's done something wrong, but how he's dealt with it makes her feel insecure, so she gets angry. So if he's humble, then she'll follow that and she'll be humble, and then she'll see what she did wrong, because he's already seen what he's done wrong. So that's the meaning of the man leads and the woman follows. Not that the man sits there on the couch and says, bring me this, get me that. That's actually a feminine mentality. Right? Like that. So that's the difficulty. Does that make more sense? Okay. Yes.
But nowadays, some men are more feminine and some women are more masculine. So all these things are, you know, you are discussing these things. All these things, two things also work nowadays. You are discussing.
They always work. Does when you go into the kitchen, then you turn on the fire, or, you know, you turn on the tap of water.
Yeah,
You know what I'm saying? It means cooking's done with fire, boiling's done with water. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That means if you want a fire to work, it has to get air. And it burns. No air, it doesn't burn. You understand? So women are more masculine because the men are being more feminine. That's all. The men behave more masculine, the women will behave more feminine. You know what I'm saying? A woman has to have the facilities and environment and everything that she requires. So either the men arrange it or they'll get it themselves. You know what I'm saying? So a woman will be more masculine if she's been let down by men. Then she'll take that on. But if there's men that she can trust and all that, then she won't act like that. So that's all. It's not that anything's changed. The needs and the methodology are still exactly the same. Even if they're yelling and screaming and burning their bras, they're still doing it as women. They're not doing it as men. Right? You know what I'm saying? Men have a men's movement. They don't burn their underwear. Right? Man's movement, burn our underwear. They don't do it. It's a woman's thing. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just, so even the most liberated, aggressive, you know, woman that's had a, you know, what is it, mammectomy and a hysterectomy, still they'll act as women and their needs are as women. It doesn't change at all. You know, so the main problem is actually just the men being trained to be men. Like that. And then if the women practice what is the, you know, nice etiquettes and that of women, and it makes the whole thing a lot easier. But it only works if men behave as men. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes?
I heard a statement from Prabhupada that in ISKCON all the brahmacharis should stay brahmacharis and all the girls should get married. So how does it work practically?
Yes. It means all the girls should get married because then they're the most comfortably situated and then they can really focus nicely. It means you get one or two girls here or there that being a brahmacharini works for them, but it's not actually that many like that. They would have to, yeah, it can happen, it's rare, but even those girls, generally it works very nicely, but they're very intelligent and they just seem that anything that they would be interesting in doesn't exist. You know, they're smart enough to figure that out. So therefore, then they comfortably remain as brahmacharinis, like that. But otherwise, then that's when they feel secure and all that, so then they can, you know, then their trust and all that can come out more, so they trust more in Krishna and can do more like that. Does that make sense? So that's why they should all get married. The brahmacharis then, if they can understand this whole process, in other words, a brahmachari would know how all this works. He would actually know technically how you deal with women and everything. But he sees that there's nothing there that he actually requires. Right? There's nothing, he doesn't need that. In other words, he's perfectly satisfied just in a simple service and everything like that. Then that person should stay as a brahmachari. That's what everybody should endeavor for. But a few make that. Right? And the other ones then become first-class brahmacharis, so then they don't need to get married. Right? Because if it comes between whether, you know, you just live a simple life and go back to Godhead, or an extremely complex life, you know, and go back to Godhead, why you wouldn't take the simpler? Right? But unfortunately, the girls don't have to worry that the majority of the boys, even though they understand everything, still the complex is their option. So the girls don't have to worry. What they have to worry about is that the boys are being trained. That's the worry. Right? So if the girls demand more training, then you'll find the boys will do it. If the girls are easier fighting amongst themselves, then it's more, makes it harder. Does that make sense?
Didn't Prabhupada say something like, I don't know exactly, that this modern women's live, getting all the women out to work and so on, it's a kind of conspiracy?
He's mentioned that all these different things of the women being more prominent, that it's appreciated by the men, right? You're sitting down at the office with all these other boring suits, you know, like that. But now you have a few ladies around because they're liberated, then they show off a lot of, you know, a lot to look at, you know, and they flirt and hang around. So it makes work much more interesting, like that. So that would be one thing. I know he mentioned something, I think, in regard to sports, right? Like, you see the, you know, you go to like, you take Wimbledon or something, you know, your top Grand Slam championship in tennis, right? Or any, you know, the tennis. So the men are out there in generally kind of like long shorts, not even short shorts, kind of long shorts and a baggy t-shirt, right? But the women are out there in practically, you know, how you say, tights, you know, with a skirt that, you know, hardly even covers, you know, how you say, their crotch, you know, and really tight tops and everything like that, showing plenty, you know. So it's not like you have to wear that to play, that's what they'll say. The men are wearing these big baggy t-shirts right up to the neck, right? They're not wearing singlets, you know, with no sleeves. They're wearing big baggy t-shirts. So, but the girls don't wear big baggy t-shirts. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it makes it much more interesting. So the men aren't complaining. That's the thing. The women being liberated out on the street that you can see means for the men is easy. You don't have to buy magazines. Now you just walk out on the street. Buy yourself some sunglasses. That's your only... needed accoutrement, so you can just sit there and watch all the girls, you know, like that makes it easy. So that way, that's why it's said women are less intelligent, because they think, you know, hi, we got the men, you know, but actually men still are enjoying themselves more than before. Before it was hard, you wanted to get close to the girl, you had to be committed. Now you don't have to at all. Girls are so easy, easily available, you can see everything, hey, you know. You know what I'm saying? So like that, so that's why it's less intelligent, because they don't catch that. You know, so if a girl's intelligent, then that chastity, modesty, shyness, that's your smart girls. You know what I'm saying? If I have a diamond, very valuable diamonds. So I just keep it laying around, and you know, I sit down on the sidewalk to drink my drink, and I put it down next to me, and, right? Or I keep it locked up at home. So that means that even though the girls are so valuable, it's actually the women themselves who take themselves cheaply. Untrained men will take them for granted, but not necessarily cheaply. So taking for granted is, how you say, taken as cheap. But it's the women who take themselves as cheap. Because they just make themselves commonly available. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that okay?
Maharaj, chanting Japa together with devotees, what's the special benefit? It's like generally recommended, but also...
Chanting with devotees.
Yeah.
Chanting Japa.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, there'll be more chanting, because you do loud chanting, so you're hearing yours, you're hearing theirs. So it's more of an environment of, you know, inspiring each other.
Just I have also a statement that those who chant like this Ubangsu or softly, it's like natural that they want to chant separately from those who chant very loud.
Point is whatever you're absorbed in, that's what you should do, right? Whatever makes you fixed and focused on chanting your japa, do that. You know, but it's not uncommon that, you know, you go to a place where others are doing the same thing you want to do. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so. That's what makes it, you know, you go to watch sports, so let's say that there's a big match playing and you're the only one in the stadium. You wouldn't consider it as exciting as if there's, you know, 100,000 people there, like that. You know what I'm saying? So there's more people doing what you're doing, so it increases the, generates more enthusiasm. So the idea is that everybody's trying to chant sincerely, so therefore you're there, and it generates the same thing, you know. But if it's a problem for you, you know, the so much, you know, volume of sound, then you go to some place where it's quiet, like that. But the point is if you stay awake, then go there. But if you fall asleep, then you should stay with everybody else. You know what I'm saying? If you can be alone and chant nicely in the proper time and everything and get quality japa, then do that. But if you don't, then better to chant with everybody else. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, to go from Shravana to Prema, it seems a very long time. It should take like many lives. But at the same time, there is like this promise that if you just stick to your service, then Krishna will come in the end and just kick away all the mantras and take you to Prema. So which one is it?
Which one is it? The taking up the devotional process that is practically impossible and taking unlimited lifetimes, or I just kind of do my service whether I'm focused or not, and then Krishna's going to come and make everything all right. Are those the only two options we got? I would kind of go for something a little bit in between, you know? In other words, you're trying to make a sincere endeavor to be fixed in your service, and that sincere endeavor will make everything perfect. Right? Prema is simply mature faith. That's all. You have Shraddha means you have some faith in the Krishna conscious philosophy. You think, yes, this makes sense, right? Then when that increases, then you take up the association of devotees. Right? So in that association, the more faith is there. So then when the faith increases more, then you take up the process. But you may be unstable in it. So when faith is there more, you become fixed in the process. Right? And when that faith is more, then being focused on the holy name, then that, how do you say? That prema, I mean, then ruchi comes, a taste comes, then attachment, then bhava, then prema. Right? So it's just increasing faith. So you're dealing in the same thing, it's not something else. Right? So that way, actually, it's not necessarily that distant. It's rare, but it's natural for the soul. Right? Is that okay?
Maharaj, what is the difference between Paramatma realization and Shantarasa?
Paramatma realization and Shantarasa. Paramatma realization means you understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there, and that He is the, you know, He's entered, He is the Supreme Lord, He's entered everything, He's in between everything, the source of everything, He's there before everything, He's there after, He's maintaining everything. So in other words, it's more of an intellectual understanding, right? It's more intellectual. Shantaras means you appreciate the qualities. So you appreciate God's greatness or His, you know, maintaining everybody or like this. So it's, in other words, you appreciate the qualities. Does that make sense? Like that. That'll be the difference. So, because Shanta will be in Bhagavan. The Lord's a person with qualities. Right, so you appreciate those qualities. Well, the other one, you know those qualities are there. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Maharaj, I'm still having a doubt regarding animals not having free will.
Animals not having free will.
You can bring an example, like some animals who really have complicated society structure, like let's say ants who are having really complicated systems.
Ants have really complicated systems. So, you ever seen an ant behave like a dog? Or a cat? Or like a bee? Or have you ever seen, you know, a red ant walk around like a black ant? Right? You know what I'm saying? So they do exactly what their society dictates. Right? They have a queen, they tell them what to do, that's what's done.
There's no possibility of advancement or deviation.
There's no, yeah. It means an animal cannot perform sinful activities. Whatever they do, that's, they're performing their nature. According to their nature. So that's why there's no sin. But a human being can act as a human being, can act as a dog, as a cat, as a horse, as a mouse, as a pig, like that. So that's why there's reaction. when a human being acts as a human being, then it generates, you know, good results, and they elevate themselves. If they don't act as a human being, then it generates these other forms of life.
We have choice to love Krishna or not. But the internal potency is never, they never fall down. So where is their free choice? Are they forced to love
Krishna? Why is it if you don't have free choice, you're forced? Does a mother love the child? You know what I'm saying? Mothers always like their children, right? Brothers and sisters might like each other, might not. But mothers always like their kids. Right? Isn't it? So that's just the way they are. It's just like this. You have day, you have night. Right? So that means you have to have twilight. Isn't it? Yes or no? So you have internal potency, you have external potency. So you have to have marginal potency. So the point is, that's what we are. Accept it and do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're there for. Does that make sense? You just accept who you are, it makes it a lot easier. So we understand I'm marginal, I'm a soul, I'm very small, and therefore I assist those who are the internal potency of the Lord in their service, then it makes it a lot easier. Is that okay? Yes. Something else, yeah.
I asked two small technical questions on cleanliness. The first thing about the clothes, that it is said that it should be like sewed, dhoti, for example, when doing puja or something like that.
Unsewn.
Like.
Means something sewn is not considered as pure as something unsewn.
So what happens then if there's, you know, like there's a hole in the dhoti and you have to sew it?
Well, if you have a neuter dhoti, use that for the puja. Yeah. Why you should wear rags for the puja? Right? Use the rags when you clean the temple or cook in the kitchen or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, and then the other question, wool is considered to be pure. There's also other kind of wool that's not from lamb, it's from hair, angora.
Yeah, it means any of those are pure, because nothing goes inside, right? It means when they, you know, the what do you call that? Archaeologists, when they dig things up, they find bones and hair, right? Hair is, means when the body is just like, you know, like when you're functioning, like when you breathe, you know, then you carbon dioxide, or, you know, the skin puts off all kinds of different things, you know, salts and other things. So when the bones maintaining themselves, they generate hair. So the how you say, the waste product of the bones, that's the hair on the body. That's why it's hard and like permanent, like hair. That's why, you know, culturally we deal with it, but actually if you look at it very carefully, that it's not something so special, right? Like that. But otherwise, then, you know, it's dealt with like that. So therefore, any of these kind of hairs, then they're considered pure, because nothing will go inside them, right? Cotton, you know, dirt will actually get into the fibers. Right, silk can be contaminated, but it doesn't go inside. In other words, the things from the animals are considered more pure than the things from the plants. Right, because the plant fiber, you can actually get dirt inside the fiber, while the animal products, you can't get dirt inside it. Like that. So, if you, it means if you want to wear an angora you know, cheddar for the puja. Great. Just watch out for the lamps and the oil and the, you know, all these things, because, you know, somebody's definitely not going to be happy if you ruin an angura wool, you know, something. Yeah, it means like pashmina. That's a kind of goats, you know, or cashmere. In the West, they call it cashmere. Because it was goats that lived in Kashmir. So now they call it Kashmir. They brought those goats to the West. They're goats. They're not sheep. You know, so it's... Anyways. Yeah. Yes?
Maharaj, could you, like, comment on Swamcha and Vidhinamcha concept in relation to the question Prabhupada has asked about the different potencies of the Lord, like marginal, internal, and Vishnu-dhatma? How to relate that concept of marginal and internal potency to the terms of Svamsa and Vibhinamsa, which is found in the Quran.
Well, you have to explain what is Svamsa and Vibhinamsa. Those are means. Those are Vishnu Tattva. Those are not Vishnu Tattva.
I'm just trying to find
means you have to say what the Sanskrit means. What does Svamsa mean and what does Vibhinamsa mean? But what does it mean, you'd have to say?
Svamsa is like a self part of the Lord, a copy like that.
Okay, and Vibhinamsa?
Vibhinamsa means like separate part.
Okay, so that would mean expanded. So Vibhinamsa would be expansions. It means expansions, meaning of his energy. Because the energy is the only thing that's separated. Right? Is that what you mean? Means if it's him, means it's, in other words, it's still Krishna, but he has an unlimited personality, so only a portion of that is manifest. Though even it's still unlimited, but it's a portion of unlimited. Right? So he doesn't manifest, let's say, certain qualities or activities or some manifestation. Just like you have a man and he's a high court judge. So therefore at home he'll manifest certain qualities, but when he goes and sits on the bench, then so many of those qualities he manifests at home, he won't manifest. So you only see certain very formal things like that. You know, while let's say when he's not at the bench, he's in the back sitting with other judges, then he'll manifest a little bit more, but not as much as when he's at home. You understand? So it's like that, but just here it's the same person, same form, just slightly different situations of that. But Krishna actually expands. So then that becomes a complete environment and a complete pastime with the complete associates. You know what I'm saying? He goes to the office, but Krishna, Vaikuntha, you know, it's a separate realm. You know what I'm saying? Vaikuntha is like Krishna at the office. Does that make sense? Like that. So that would just be there, but then where the living entities or the internal potency expands, then it's actually different. It's not Vishnu Tattva. So it'll be either internal potency or the jiva. Is that okay? Yes.
Are there any rules on who to allow to water tulsi plant if the person is eating meat, for example?
Well, they should wash their hands first.
Yeah, but they can still water if they have the habit of eating meat.
Yeah, it means if they respect Tulsi and like that, then yes.
Like sometimes my Tulsi plant, when I'm away, if I ask my neighbor to water Tulsi.
Yeah, as long as they're respectful, as long as they appreciate, you know, like that, then yeah, what to do, they get the benefit.
The other question I had was actually my daughter's question to me some time back. I wasn't able to answer fully. In Vaikuntha Loka and goal of Vrindavana, how do they live? What is it like? And do they cook? And do they have family?
Yes.
And so on.
It means the material world is a reflection of the spiritual. The difference is in the spiritual world, everything there is centered around Krishna. Right? While here we center it around ourselves. But that's why there's cooking here or dressing or combing hair or taking bath is because that's what they do that there. So whatever goes on here goes on there in its original state, or its pure state.
Do they have children?
Yeah, they have children. I don't know if they have children in Vaikuntha, but in Goloka, yes.
So very similar things happen there, but it's
everything happens there, but it's all in connection with Krishna. Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, Mother Yashoda cooks, and they cook on fires, and they cook in pots. You know, they cut vegetables, and they spice them. You know, it's eaten in the same way.
Do plants grow there?
Yeah, plants grow there. Plants grow, sun, moon is there, rain falls. But that's not, it's not because of the sun and moon that it's light. It's naturally effulgent there. But it's for the pastimes, and you have day, night, and all these things. So everything is conscious there. So all your plants, trees, you know, the walls, everything is conscious because it's made out of consciousness. It's made out of Chintamani, so it's all conscious. Well, here it's dead matter, but there it's all conscious. Is that okay?
Can we water plants with Maha water?
Can you water plants?
Yeah, plants.
It means Tosi plants or other plants?
Everything.
With Maha water. Yes. Just don't overwater them.
But if I am later, I will offer this flower of plant to Krishna, even.
But the water, but you, when you water a plant, then you water the root, no? You water the ground. Or you just come and throw it all over the whole plant.
It happens.
Well, better to put it on the ground. Then you don't have to worry that the leaves or flowers from the plant are prashadam. Yeah. So if you know you're going to take the leaves or flowers, put the water on the ground. You know, if it's something that you're not going to offer, let's say it's a cactus, then you put it wherever you like. But the tree gets the best benefit by putting it on the ground, because then it will drink that water. But of course, being touched by it, it also gets benefit. Okay.
Yeah. We all know that reading Srila Prabhupada's books as much as possible is very important. So the question is that how to like increase the desire for reading Prabhupada's books if one doesn't have. He understands that it's so important, but like the desire is very low. He wants to increase it.
Yeah.
So what?
Serve.
Okay.
Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya, right? Right? By service, then one gets the desire to know. Right? That's the point. By service, by karma, one naturally comes to the platform of jnana. By performing devotional service, then jnana and vairag, or knowledge and renunciation, naturally come. So therefore, through service, then that desire to, you know, study or things will just be generated.
Okay. Yeah. There are many prayers to be released from the Purusha Bhava, or the enjoying spirit. So could you briefly explain how this goes in connection to levels to sadhana to prema, when this enjoying spirit is diminishing and when it's completely destroyed?
When is the purusha, or the purusha bhav minimized? Basically, at nishta, you could say it's starting to go down. Because nishta means you have to be working from the naishkarmiya platform. So you can't be seeing that I am the controller and enjoyer so much. It's like that. Then at the bhava, then that's another major Brahma-bhuta, where it goes down, because then you're not conditioned anymore, right? You're on the transcendental platform. So then, you know, that works very nicely. But then you can't want to be the Lord or His devotee, right? So that polluted consciousness then still has to be, one has to be very, very careful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
regarding the Tulsi Kanti mala being worn by non-devotees.
Tulsi Kanti mala being worn by non-devotees.
Because sometimes it is a practice among devotees that they give it to family members who are not really strict or are not following.
No, but it's family members who are, you know, born in the family of devotees, or they're part of devotee families, but basically, so they're devotees. They're just considered general devotees, samanya, ordinary. But it's only when they seriously take up the process, you know, for initiation, then they're called sampradayic devotees. So Krishna takes that seriously. But either of those can wear neck beads.
What about some people who come to the temple and see just Tulsi Mala, Kanti Mala made of Tulsi, and they like them and they want to buy it?
Well, they'd probably buy it if it was regular beads, you know. So that I'm not really sure. But generally, see, the neck beads represent that you understand the material world is a place of misery. Right? That's why when somebody takes up the process, then they wear the neck beads. Like that. But generally, anybody who accepts Vishnu as supreme, like that, then you see sometimes they wear. But that's only in our line. In other lines, they only wear the neck beads for puja. But then they have Shankha Chakra, you know, branded on their shoulders, and that, you know, so they have something that they have tapas there, like that. So that's their tapa or mudra. Our mudra is neck beads. So we always wear the neck beads, you know, but they don't, because that's not their. That's part of the Vaishnava wear. That's why you see it'll mention wearing tulsi around the neck, you know, like, because they already have their tapa and then they wear that for puja. But for us, then we're already wearing neck beads, and then if you wear that also, then that's nice. But otherwise, how important it is for non-devotees to wear neck beads, I'm not sure. I haven't come across anything specifically that either says that they get a benefit or they can't wear. I'm not sure.
Maharaj, that is, it's very nice to hear philosophy and try to understand so many things, but when mind is broken, you can normally not think so many things. So
when mind is broken?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that. How you go? So what is the most essential and most important to be remembered? Like, because many times...
Oh, wait a minute. Now, you started out with Yamaraj. Oh, okay. So maybe I just didn't catch it. Okay, so what's the most important thing to be remembered? Instruction of Guru and the holy name. Right? If you can remember the instruction of the Guru and follow it, if you can always remember the holy name, then everything will be okay. Is that okay?
Maharaj, there are 8,400,000 species of body, and 400,000 of them is human species. So if the animal species, are there some certain species from which the soul moves to the human form, and what are the species,
yeah,
and where is the state?
Prabhupada mentions it. It means you have, it's cows, I think it's, you know, lions, tigers, and monkeys. So monkeys become humans in the mode of ignorance, the lions become humans in the mode of passion, the cows become humans in the mode of goodness. Right? That's the top. So you'll always go through the lower animals first and move up until you get to there, then back into the human form of life. And that means you're human. If you behave improperly, first you go to hell. After going through all the hellish things, then you come up through the animal species, you know, specific ones for specific, you know, sins. Then you go into one of those three, then back into human form. Okay.
He got his connection. Sometimes people have doubts about the delphin.
Dolphin.
It said that fish are below the plants, even they are less intelligent. But
It's not less intelligent, just aware of less. Because you're in the water, so that's not the natural environment. Humans move on the earth, so to live in the water, it's a completely different environment. You know what I'm saying? They may be, you know, very intelligent from amongst those living in the water, but still the consciousness of the aquatics is lower. Because they don't deal with earth, you know, fire, air, like that, you know. Well, even a plant, then there's earth, you know, that's where it lives. Earth, you know, there's air, water, you know, so they get more of the full experience. Well, fish basically just experience water. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
But from some older devotees, I heard an opinion that Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he is like Satchitananda, and he doesn't experience any misery. He doesn't know what the misery is, so he has no compassion. That's why there is a need for the pure devotees to give his mercy, which like he is not giving. Is there some fault in this understanding?
That's not a matter of fault. It's a matter of compassion. Otherwise, why does he expand and do all these different things? You know what I'm saying? You could say that Krishna himself is not, and why would he come and perform his pastimes if it was not to, you know, reclaim the fallen souls? You know what I'm saying? Like that. The connection of that is because he does not know what is the material, the experience of the material conditioned soul. Therefore, generally those who were in the material world can relate to it. So therefore, they're the ones that come and preach. Right? But it's not that others aren't doing that. Right? The Lord comes with his eternal associates. They're preaching, they're doing. But when you kind of like come where the Lord's manifest pastimes are not there, then you may get, you know, so a lot of times the conditioned souls are asked to come and do that. You know what I'm saying? Because they've been there, they can appreciate, you know, the importance and all that. But it's not that it's, like, that's the only thing I've ever heard. But this element that, but that doesn't mean that all the great personalities come are conditioned souls. It just means that they may be engaged in that way. But otherwise, it's his compassion that he comes and performs his pastimes. Actually, if you look at it, conjugal ras, the basic element of it, is karuna, right? It's compassion. You know what I'm saying? So that element there, just that he is interacting with his energy. So to say that Swayam Krishna doesn't have compassion, that is the main element of the original rasa. Like that. So that wouldn't be. That wouldn't be. You could say is that there's the other element that Krishna says, I will, as you surrender to me, I will reciprocate. So therefore, if someone doesn't surrender, he can't reciprocate. That was Advaitacharya's point, because he is Mahavishnu, right? So he is the, you know, would be the source of all incarnations in the material world, other than Swayam Krishna. So then, that means him and any of his expansions can't do anything, because in Kali Yuga, no one approaches, so you can't reciprocate. So that's why he then says he'll call Lord Chaitanya, because Krishna is the same. Right? Like that. But his devotees are not. Devotees don't make that statement. So Krishna taking the mood of the devotee, then therefore you get both. Because only Krishna can liberate you, but you only get Krishna's mercy through the devotee. So therefore Lord Chaitanya will do both. Right? So then he makes the point, only Lord Chaitanya can save them. Is that okay? Yeah. So that would be how I would see the, you know, those points. Yeah. Yeah? Oh, what time is it? 8:45. Okay. Last point, you had something?
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll leave it.
Cow is considered as our mother, but she's giving milk. And but what about goats?
Ants?
Goats.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Generally, humans don't drink goat milk. Cow milk refines, develops the finer brain tissues in the brain. Goat milk may be used for a specific health thing. Like if you have a specific, goat's milk is good for specific health things, just like buffalo milk is also. So if there's a specific need in health, you may drink it. But as a general milk that you drink, you generally always use cow's milk. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's not that it can't be drinking, but it's just like, it's like this. If you weren't taking goat's milk for a particular function, let's say you needed it, you know, then you have a milk that will develop your brain or a milk that will just do something for your body. So which would you choose? Yeah, isn't it? So that's the point. So goat's milk is taken if it's important for some health consideration, but if it's not, then cow's milk is better.
Can we offer it to Krishna?
Goat's milk. If that's what you're taking in your house, yes, but in the temple you would use cow's milk. You know what I'm saying? If somebody's taking goat's milk, it might be offered on the side. That's his medicine. You know what I'm saying? But Krishna drinks cow's milk. Right? Goats are there. Means they have it. The Abiras are goat herds. Like that. Means there's three levels of Vaishyas. Means those that herd cows are the best. Those that herd buffaloes are the second best. And those who herd goats are the third best. So they must use goat's milk for something. You know, unless those goats are the ones that they get to make cheddars out of. You know. So they only wear pashmina over there. So I'm not sure. Is that there?
Yeah.
So that's why the cows is. Plus the cow, all the demigods live in their body, all these different things like that. Goats, it's never been said. You know. Okay, so we'll end here. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Adaita Bhaktivinoda ki
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandi
Bhaktivinoda Maharaj ki
Jai. Lá eu vou ser, porque eu não vou lá.